This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice where I tell you you have absolutely no case. If you're injured, need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com. And if you're a lawyer and want to help our listeners, please go to handleonthelaw.com, click on the Join Today tab at the top of the page. The following is a pre-recorded program. Boy, here is an interesting one out of Nashville, Tennessee. The ex-girlfriend of a man who detonated an explosive in downtown last Christmas has filed a lawsuit saying that she should receive the reward of $284,000 that was offered. And here is the point that is being made. The reward was for information leading to the capture and conviction of the person responsible for that blast. And she's the one that helped, I guess, identify him, leading the authorities to him, but the blast went off, and he died in the blast. And she's saying, I helped identify him, and what the authorities are saying, the people that put up the reward, is saying, wait a minute. The reward was for leading to the capture and conviction of the person responsible. Hey, he died in the blast. There is no capture. There is no conviction. Therefore, you know what? There's no money. I got to tell you, I think the city is right on this one. Capture and conviction is pretty specific. Dying in a blast is something very different. I don't think the award flies. I don't know. The lawsuit is being heard right now, and I guess when a decision is made, I'll come back and report it. Let's go ahead and take some phone calls.
Jimmy. Hello, Jimmy. Welcome.
Bill, I was going down the 605 freeway, okay? Traffic went from moderate to high, heavy traffic, okay? I'm slowing down, reducing my speed to adjust myself for traffic. I moved over one lane. I already established myself in that lane, okay? I was in that lane for anywhere from 10 to 20 seconds. Wham! Lady comes up behind me, nails me from the back, shoots me into the car. To the
she rear, okay,
inside,
she
right?
rear-ended you, right?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, anyways, because the traffic reduced down, I was going probably 8 to 10 miles an hour adjusting for the traffic speed. She rear-ended me, okay? I get with her claim specialist and everything. Claim specialist says, well, you know what? An accident report, sometimes those are possibly like altered, okay, and are written up biasly, okay, and now they don't want to pay.
Okay, well, that's easy. If she rear-ended you, it's absolute, Jimmy. It's basically done, unless she can establish that you purposely, you know, pulled in front of her and then slammed on the brakes just to effectuate an accident. I mean, short of that, no, she's at fault. And if the insurance company doesn't want to pay, then all you can do is sue her. That's it. You can collect from you. Do you have uninsured motorist?
No, I have. I just have the regular California state, but she's got full coverage. However,
no, I understand, but they don't want to pay you, Jimmy.
Right. Her statement, reason she's holding up the most, okay, is she goes, I have to get a third party accident report.
No, she doesn't. No, that's a crock. No, she doesn't.
Okay.
You got rear-ended, okay. Jimmy, and you know she's just making it up. Got rear-ended, and if the insurance company doesn't want to pay, you sue. And now,
even though she says that I struck the wall,
she rear-ended. It doesn't matter. She rear-ended you, Jimmy.
Okay.
Starts and stops with a rear-end accident. So now, how much damage to your car, and how much physical injury was there to you?
There's about $10,000 to my car.
Ooh.
And My back is
all right. And you've gone to a doctor.
The lawyers are sending me a doctor to ASAP. I just kind of got on board.
Okay, all right, that's good.
Yeah.
Then you're doing everything right, Jimmy. But I wouldn't worry. I mean, you're going to collect on this. Now the question is, how much? Is it soft tissue? And if it's soft tissue, where there's no discernible injury, and that's not to say that soft tissue injuries aren't real. I mean, I've seen people laid up for weeks on an accident that was 5 miles an hour if you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. The problem is, is that the insurance company that's going to write you a check through your lawyer doesn't know if, you know, you're exaggerating, if the doctor is sort of fudging, when the doctor will, because it's PI lawyers and PI doctors. But, you know, based on $10,000 worth of damage and your back is all screwed up, what kind of treatment are you having for your back? Is it chiropractic?
Well, actually, you know what? Like I said, Bill, I just barely got signed up.
Then you're doing everything right. Kick back, and your lawyer is handling it correctly, sending you to the doctor. Yeah, doing everything. Roger, welcome to Handle on the Law. Hi, Roger.
Bill, hi, Bill.
Yes.
And I'm calling on behalf of my wife and myself. We were both victims of Hurricane Irma. That was not good.
Okay,
we returned to California.
All right, tell me your victims. What does that mean? What happened to you as a victim of Hurricane Irma?
Apartment that was already pre-contaminated with mold, formaldehyde, toxic mold, Stachybotrys, etc.
That was before. That was before Hurricane Irma.
It was even before.
It
all documented. We were trying to leave and did as fast as we could afterwards, and throughout multiple years, we have a letter from Homeland Security. Because our claims to FEMA constantly denied by FEMA, and they even confirmed that denial to Congressman Ted Lieu. However, that letter confirms, after multiple years of investigation by Homeland Security into FEMA, that in fact our civil rights were violated and our constitutional rights.
Wow. All right. So hold on a minute.
Yep.
I'm confused as to your home for years was already moldy and it was already in a lot of trouble before the hurricane came in. That's the part.
It was multiple year investigation, but we had only been in the apartment in Florida for months and we were trying to leave.
All right. So the apartment wasn't moldy before Hurricane Irma. Do I have that right?
It was pre-contaminated.
Then why didn't you leave? Then why didn't you get the hell out of there? Why would you stay in a moldy place for more than a day and a half? And why would you move into a place that was moldy and that was infested and whatever other problems you have? That's a good
apartment manager denied any mold.
Okay, all right.
And we didn't notice until we were there.
Okay, all right, all right. And then you tried to get out.
We left as soon as we could.
Okay, all right.
We were diligent.
Yeah, all right. That's fair. You asked for help for FEMA after Hurricane Irma hit. You were in the apartment when Hurricane Irma hit, correct?
We were residing in the apartment, but everybody had to leave. We were in a A-level evacuation.
Okay,
we
so
had
you
to
were
evacuate and
all
then
right,
return.
You were so yep. You were in the apartment when Hurricane Irma hit. You were living there, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Correct.
And FEMA, and interesting, so FEMA's denied the claim, and Department of Homeland Security said your civil rights were violated. I don't know how Homeland Security can make that determination. But based on that, if you have that letter, and I don't know how that works, that HHS or Homeland Security is going to decide that your rights were violated. I don't know, was a lawyer there? Who actually determined that your rights were violated?
All of the documentation that we submitted, over 100 pages, multiple times, multiple ways, fax, email, etc., and even via and through Congressman Ted Lieu.
Okay, who
FEMA said? Oh, we don't have documentation.
Okay, you got a couple of issues. I first of all, you have a federal issue. I would go back to your congressman and start dealing with that because something doesn't make sense there. Were other people in the apartment granted FEMA help? Do you happen to know? And if they were and you were discriminated against as the only one, then of course there's discrimination. On the other hand, is there a reason why that was excluded? And I think you have to ask from Department of Homeland Security. By the way, tone of your voice is I would deny everything. It's so aggravating.
Okay, this is Handle on the Law.
This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice. Hello, Mike. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi, yeah. My mother passed away, and she left the house to four of us. Now, years ago, which I didn't realize, to transfer the ownership of the house, someone gave her a dollar for that house. Now, her house is, we sold the house and for $800,000. We each get $200,000. Now they're saying I'm going to have to pay capital gains. And I always thought it was a gift. So,
well, no, if it's in here, no. If your mom died and you got the house through the inheritance, that's not a gift. You inherited. So how did you get the house? Was it through a trust or through a straight will?
It was no will. It was she actually, someone paid her a dollar for that house, and they put our names on the deed. So we actually, four of us, owned that house for
years. All right, so you got it. So you got it before she died?
Yes.
So she transferred the property to you before she died?
That's correct.
Yeah, the dollar means nothing, by the way, Mike. She just transferred the house, and the government can come back and say, that's a gift. Yeah. Here you go. Here's a house. Now, if it's upon death, it's an inheritance, and you don't pay tax on that. But, yeah, you know, if I give you a house, it's a gift.
Well, someone gave her a dollar for the house.
That doesn't matter. Who is someone? Who is someone
one
gave
of my
her a
sisters.
Dollar?
One of my sisters gave her a dollar for the house. I don't know who. I know that four of our names are on the deed.
But that doesn't matter. I don't understand what a dollar means. So
they bought it. They purchased the home for a dollar from my mother.
They didn't purchase the home for a dollar. That's not a purchase. There's no law would recognize that buying a house for a dollar is a sale. That means that has no significance whatsoever.
And so
the only issue becomes if she transferred the property to you before her death, that is a gift.
Yes, then, she did.
And then that's what you have to deal with. There's no way around that. Sandy. Hello, Sandy. Welcome.
Hello, Bill. I was caring for my sick boyfriend, and we filled out, he made me power of attorney. We filled out the advanced health directive, and I was in charge to handle his affairs once he passed. So I had him cremated. And then he actually died before the will was signed, which he had left me everything. And so his family, who he was estranged from for many, many, many years, came in, and they were successful in taking the entire estate. And now, since I hold the permit for the ashes, they're demanding the ashes.
Wait a minute. What do you mean you hold the permit for the ashes? I'm not familiar with that.
Well, when I went to pick up the ashes from the mortuary, there was a permit card in there as well. And you have to carry that card whenever you carry the ashes anywhere.
Okay, I got it. So it just who's ever holding it has to have a permit. I didn't know that. But okay. And now they want the ashes. And all right. And what do you want to do?
If I have to give them up.
I don't know. You don't have to. You can say no. Take me to court. You know, here it is. My name. I got him. You know, you don't own the ashes. You know, I'm the one that cremated him. I was the one that was given the directive. Now, assets are different. You're right. They were able to get it because they were family. You're not. But what are they going to do? Are they going to take you to court? Are they going to file a lawsuit to get the ashes?
Oh, they might. They're
they
very
might.
Vindictive.
So here's what you do. All right. Do you have a fireplace at home?
Yeah.
Okay. So you burn some logs. Wait until they're ashes, put those in a baggie, buy yourself an urn, and give it to them and go, here you go.
Sheesh.
Yeah, I do that. It sure works for me. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Bill.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, so I bought with my parents a condo back in 2003 in San Diego, and I ended up leaving San Diego, and so when I left San Diego to move to L.A., I decided to rent the condo. I'm now wanting to refinance the condo, and the bank is asking for or requiring an assignment of rent to refinance the condo because it's a rental as opposed to a residential primary residence.
Yep.
So do you see, I mean, I understand what it is. I understand the concept. If you default on the loan, the bank can, you know, has the right to accept the rent. But do you see any legal, long-term legal?
No. The only, no. What you've done is the description of the property has gone from an owner-occupier to a rental, an investment rental property, which is more risky and you pay more interest. And then at some point, assuming that you want to move back in, then you just change, you go ahead and let the bank know, I want to refi it. I'm moving back in. It's no longer a rental, and I am now occupying it. Now, is there any way for them to actually know? No. But if you lie and they catch you, you're screwed because you've committed fraud on a document that actually is controlled, that there's all kinds of federal issues. I mean, you can't, because you're signing under the penalty of perjury. But the bottom line is they're doing exactly what they're doing, and it doesn't seem to be anything wrong with that at all.
So the assignment of rents, you think, is a pretty standard
document. Well, no, you know what? Assignment of rents, they want the rents?
Well, it's an absolute assignment, basically, but then there's a...
Wait a sec. The assignment means that whatever rent you get goes to them?
They have the right to it, and then it's...
No, they don't. Probably rent. Only... You know, you have to read that carefully. Probably in the event of a default, any rents have to go to them. Read the document carefully. Because okay. There's something going on there. They're not allowed to say, we get the rent. They are allowed to say, in the event you default, and if there's any rent doing, we're going to get it. That they're allowed to do. So you read that document.
Okay, this is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice, where I tell you, you have absolutely no case.
Hello, Jack. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Hello, Jack, you there? Hello, Jack.
Yes, Jack. Hey, Bill, sorry.
Hey, Jack. All right, welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes, Jack, what can I do for you?
So, Bill, we've been out of our house for 6 months due to a flood, 4 months arguing with the insurance company. During the last 3 months, they put us up in a house, very expensive house, that required a $5,000 security deposit. Paid the security deposit through the insurance company's intermediary, but the contract was between the landlord and myself. We've been out for over a month now. I know the statute says she has to return the deposit or state why she's not returning it within 21 days.
All right, now we're talking, wait a second, the deposit, are you talking about the $5,000 deposit that you didn't pay?
No, I paid it.
Yeah, oh, you? Why did you pay? Wait a sec. If she's putting you up, if your landlord is putting you up into a property and you have to pay the deposit, why is that?
No. The insurance company's intermediary who sets up housing acts as an intermediary. Instead of me paying directly to the landlord the $5,000, I did it through the insurance company's intermediary so that if there were any issues like had come up,
okay, but I'm still confused. Your house is flooded. Insurance company comes in. They have to put up housing. Why did you have to pay any deposit?
Well, because the insurance company does not pay for the security deposit. They'll pay for the housing, which was very expensive, but they won't pay for the security deposit. That's just part of the insurance company's,
That's part of their insurance. That's part of their insurance policy. Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense.
My insurance.
Oh, your insurance. Okay, hang on. So the house is flooded. All right. So you get to pay for the deposit. All right. Fair enough. So what's your question?
Okay. So when I file my, they claimed we did damages. That's not possible. I know for a fact she was just lying about it. So I'm just going to, I know that according to the statute, I think it's 1950 is the number, that I can get, if she doesn't pay within the 21 days, I can get double the amount of the security deposit back. So I was going to take her to small claims court.
Right.
And my question is this. Can I simply put in my, whatever the forms are, that she violated the 21-day rule, hasn't provided the information
Yes.
Doesn't necessarily, and that's the end of that. I don't have to come up with anything else.
I don't think you have to come up with any, I don't think you have to come up with anything else. And you put down that she owes you $10,000 based on the $5,000 initial payment that's owed, and pursuant to law, it can be doubled, and you're asking the court to double it. Yep.
Exactly. Okay, and you, perfect. That's all.
Yep, and you asked for the full $10,000, even though the damage is $5,000, but under the law, you're allowed up to twice as much. Happens all the time. Hello, Amy. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi. I recently was ruled against in a petition of a probate case. I called you about a month ago and asked you about it, and you said to call back and let you know, but I was wondering, the judge put in the ruling that there were both written and oral arguments, but there were never any oral arguments. Is there any recourse in normally?
Yeah, you could try to appeal it and simply say that the judge said there were oral and written arguments and then ignored or didn't hear any oral arguments. But the judge is going to say that was a mistake.
That's yeah, what my attorney kind of said.
Yeah, it's just the judge going to say, oh, yeah, you know, I only... And oral arguments normally don't have a whole lot of influence anyway. Judges rule on written arguments all the time. And so, yeah, it's not going to help you very much. So you got nailed on this, right, Amy?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and how much were you supposed to get that you didn't get, or what did it cost you?
It cost about $35,000 in attorney fees, and I lost about $600,000.
Ooh.
Two step siblings.
Yeah, it's always a fight. Yeah, okay. You know, I always talk about that when you, there's always inevitably there is a fight among siblings. Constantly, always. Which is why whenever I talk about a trust and there's any money or a will, you want it airtight. By the way, there will still be a fight. Let's say you've got three kids, and one of them you hate, haven't talked to that kid in 25 years. The other two have been wonderful, lovely, have taken care of the family and you. So all the money goes to those two. That third kid, the estranged kid, guaranteed there'll be a fight. Guaranteed there'll be a contest, which is why it has to be completely 100% airtight, which is why you never want to do that one on your own. If you have any kind of substantial money and there are siblings involved, we have multiple kids, yeah, absolutely. Hello, Mike.
I won the default judgment.
Yes.
And I the attorney that I was using no longer practice, so the firm gave me another one. He says that I'm jumping the gun to collect. I need to sit on it and wait, and all I did was end up paying him more. How
okay.
do I collect?
Well, you're not going to be, if the person is not there and you don't know where that person is, or the person has no assets, you're not going to collect, Mike.
Okay.
Okay, that's, it's gone.
Okay.
However, the attorney asking you to sit on it and collecting fees, that's a different issue. How much money did the attorney ask for after telling you to sit on it? What did the attorney collect? How much money was that?
He used my $4,000 retainer.
And how much of it was after the default judgment? Do you know?
All of it.
No. Here it is, because there's a timeline here, Mike.
Okay.
And one is default judgment has been granted. Boom. There is there's amount of money that the attorney charges up to that point.
Okay.
Now, at that point, he is saying, sit on it and don't collect, but I'm going to keep on charging you. How much was that out of the $4,000? Do you have any idea?
No, I do not.
Okay, that's what you're going to have to demand. Mike, that's what you're going to have to demand and say, I want an accounting on this because you asked me to sit on it for no reason whatsoever, unless the attorney was doing an investigation, trying to do an asset search, trying to figure it out, and we'll see what the attorney says. But you instantly asked for a full accounting and an explanation as to what's going on.
We will return, okay? This is Handle on the Law.
And welcome back to Handle on the Law, Marginal Legal Advice. Hello, Rhoda. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
My question, I have an account with Emery Gas Propane Company. I had a contract with them, and they went over the prices. They start charging me higher than the contract. And I brought it to their attention about a year later, and they said that they will not do anything about it. And then a class action took place against them. All the customers, they realized they were overcharged by Emery Gas. And I brought it to their attention. I told them, I'm going to join the lawsuit. And they said, you know what? We're going to wipe your debts. We're not going to ask for it. Forgive it. Forget it. And we're not going to, you have a zero balance with us. And they closed it. And this back in 2020. Now, the lawsuit settled in March 17. They settled for $6.5 million. And then on March 20, they actually sent me a collection agency asking for the amount one more time.
All right. And
they have the right to do that.
They have the right to ask, but are they going to get it? No. And so what may end up happening is you slip through the cracks, Rhoda. And that's why you have to call customer service of the company, the gas company, and say, hey, you cleared it, and now you're back. I'm back in collections. Is there anything in writing that says you have a zero balance, you owe nothing?
No, over the phone. That's a problem.
Rhoda, that's a problem.
They refused to send an email from the beginning, but they said we're waiving it.
Yeah, that's the problem. But call them up anyway. Call customer service and go, what are they saying?
They said there is nothing we could do for you.
All right.
You
how much is the balance? Rhoda, how much is the balance?
$6,000.
Oh, that's enough money. Yeah. Okay, they are regulated probably, and you want to find what the regulatory agency is. I'd go back, forget about the collection agency, go right back to the company and go for customer service and say, hey, this is what happened, and the collection agency is saying, too bad, I still want my money? Is it the company that is telling you too bad?
Both. The company, ICS System Inc., they're in Minnesota, I think, and Emery Gas is telling me the same thing. There is nothing we could do for you. We need our money.
All right. Are you still with the same company or with another company?
Actually, I'm still with the same company.
And they haven't cut off your propane yet?
No, it's for a different location. I'm still with them.
Okay. Wow. And they're not willing to help. But all of their agreement to put you at a zero balance was all done verbally. There's no record of it whatsoever.
Correct.
That's a problem. That's a problem, Rhoda, because they're going to say, we don't know what you're talking about. We never said it. We never agreed to it. Now, and you have no connection with the settlement, correct?
No, I did not get anything from the settlement. I never joined the settlement.
All right. Yeah, that's a problem. You're going to have to just try to work your way through it because you have absolutely no proof whatsoever that they agreed to put you on zero balance. And all you have is a bill that's outstanding. Yeah, that's a problem. KC. Hello, KC.
Hey, Bill. I entered into a contract to buy property that we had known soil contamination on, and that cost me about $300,000 to clean up. What they did not disclose is that there was a water monitoring well that was intentionally contaminated, and that cost me another $200,000, and I sued them for non-disclosure. We settled that because they kept throwing paperwork and delay after me until I ran out of money. So we settled that. But as part of that settlement agreement, they had several things they had to do. One of them being removing heavy equipment from the site. And they failed to do that. I resold the property to a builder to build residential units. And part of my contract with them was that the property would be clear. And I was relying on my settlement agreement that it would be clear. I had to then hire a crane, an operator, to remove like heavy equipment like shipping containers from the site at a cost of $5,000, amongst other costs that my sellers failed to perform. On the settlement agreement, they're arguing two things. One, I cannot sue them because of the settlement agreement. And two, if I could, it's in the wrong venue. My question to you is, are they afforded the protections of a settlement agreement when they have breached it?
No, No, they absolutely are not. The settlement agreement, when they agree that they'll do A, B, and C, and they don't, that's not a settlement agreement. So the answer is no to that. Now the issue is the wrong venue. Where's the lawsuit to take place? Where is it? Who sued who at this point?
Well, I'm suing them to recover those costs I had okay. to spend. And so I signed the contracts, the original contracts, in my office in Long Beach. I'm suing them in the Long Beach courthouse. So that satisfies the condition of where the contracts
were signed. Okay, so why are they saying it's the wrong venue?
They have two things. They're saying they signed it in a different city, so it doesn't apply. And number two, they're saying the settlement agreement says any actions to enforce the settlement agreement have to go through Norwalk, which does not have small claims.
Wait
and
a
therefore
minute. Hold, hang on a minute. We're talking venue is not different parts of the city. I mean, that is crazy. Norwalk versus San Bernardino or Encino versus Sherman Oaks. None of that makes any sense. What they're doing is just throwing crap at you, Casey. That's what they're doing.
Which they did on the original contract.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
As well.
That's what they're doing. And if so you go into small claim, is it less than $10,000, Casey?
No, but I'm going to sue for 10.
All right, so you sue for 10. They're going to go in and argue venue. It changed. You go, what venue? They wanted a different city. And there is no settlement agreement because they breached it. Is going to be your argument. And maybe the court does say, okay, you have to go to another city. So, KC, you go to Norwalk. Big deal. It's not like they're changing it from Los Angeles to North Carolina.
No, but they're professional process dodgers. I'm not used to dealing with the bottom rung of humanity.
Yeah, you have no choice with this. That's what they're doing. And I've been caught up with people like that, too, where they're just flakes upon flakes, and that's what you do.
Okay, this is Handle on the Law.